This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
Yo, you are in the right place at the right time, listening to the right thing. Tech Webcast. Congratulations on choosing such an awesome thing to listen to. You are clearly very smart. You're into tech stuff. You love hearing Brad and Jason and their guests chat. And you're probably really good looking too. Well done. So let's get into it. The weekly tech extravaganza that is Tech Webcast. In 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on Saturday, the 14th of April, 2012. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday nights at 7. Today's hosts are Brad, Steve, Jason, and Jody, and our guest is David Amberland. Good afternoon, Brad.
Hey, Jason, welcome back, mate.
I'm back, y'all. Mate,
I am so happy to have you back, mate.
How's it going?
Good, mate. How you going?
You've been holding the fort in the meantime.
I've moved house. Yep. I hear that. I hear you've been moving house.
Further out west.
Good on you. What made you move? You're moving for personal reasons or you just wanted to move?
Yeah, well, I'd moved in close to get a better school for my daughter when she was living with me, and now she's gone back to Melbourne to live with her mum. I thought I might as well save some money, and a friend of mine who I was sharing a house with before I moved to Westmead with her, his housemates moved out, and he was like, I need to get a housemate to help with the bills and stuff. And I said, well, how about me moving back again?
Oh. Cool.
And I just checked. I had the idea. I was having insomnia night, and I had the idea. Oh, what if I move back? And I went and had a look at my lease, and it ran out in like 3 days after the idea.
Cool.
And his flatmates were moving out in the next couple of days, so it all worked out really well.
Good stuff. So you got your TiVo and that stuff set up and stuff, that sort of thing.
Well, there's the rub. See, moved into this place, but can't seem to get a signal from the antenna, so we might have to get somebody out here to have a look at that. I don't know. He said that he had an antenna booster downstairs for the TV there, but the house also got hit by lightning a few weeks ago, so I don't know if it blew the antenna booster there or not.
Oh, okay.
So TiVo is pretty useless at the moment, except for playing back stuff already recorded until I get someone else out to fix that. But good news is when I moved in a couple of days ago, I checked the internet speed, and it was had about 4 to 5 megasecond at Westmead.
Okay.
This one I came to was about 5.5 to 6, and then I said, why don't you try this new Billion 7800N modem that you recommended?
Yes.
Plugged it in, we're getting about 12.5 megs.
Nice. Good
so,
stuff.
So I went from about 4.5 to 5 megs to 12 just by moving, so I didn't have to get my internet fixed up and all that I was trying to do at the other place to get faster speed, because I just moved out here and bam, there it is.
So nice.
We're also very tempted to get Big Pond Cable. We might look at that soon once he gets a bit more financial again.
Cool, dude. What else have you been up to past 3 weeks? Any other news? Any other
stuff? Well, I had a holiday with my daughter, so I took a week off work and I had this idea that we could make a game together.
Oh, yeah.
So she drew some pictures and I digitized them into the computer and started working on a game. So I've got that probably about a third of that done. It looks pretty cool. And she did some sound voice recordings and I did some. So it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Also, we've got Steve. Hey, Steve. Welcome back, mate.
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
Yeah.
What's been going on with you?
Been having a few problems, you know, the audio issues and video things. So hopefully I got that situated. And of course, JTV chat's been down. So when I did my show just before yours, you know, I couldn't talk to anybody. I went ahead and did the show because everybody was watching.
Well,
so
I've got some news coming up. I've got some news for you and Jason and Jody very soon. So after we speak to David, I'll chat about that. And talking of Jody, hey, Jody.
Hey, hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Going great.
Good to hear you again.
Yeah, good to hear. Yeah, good to hear you back on the show.
Awesome. And it's good to have Jason back too. We've missed you, Jason.
Ooh, thank you,
Jason. Yeah, have you been listening to the past other episodes, Jason? That you amenable?
I haven't had time, though. No. I've been so busy with moving and holiday and stuff that I haven't had time to do anything, but I'll start downloading them probably this afternoon or tomorrow.
Yeah, have a listen. Yeah, it's the show needs you back on here. So,
should we do a bit of news?
What's that?
Should we do a bit of news?
Sure, go ahead. Jump in, mate.
Alrighty, about 40% of IT administrators go snooping through emails of employees, particularly those of high-level executives, claims chief executive of a firm that manages IT security of various Australian companies and government agencies. A company's IT admins have access to virtually every document company-wide, including the executive files, payroll information and medical data, and many can't help themselves in gaining access to emails, says Carlo Manassian, founder and CEO of Earthwave, the North Sydney-based firm that is hired by organisations looking to outsource their IT security. Mr. Minassian, who often also hunts down people who are breaching IT policy within an organisation, says leaving IT admins unsupervised is like putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank. He said the IT administrators snooping on email happened regularly, went unnoticed in most instances, and added that it would continue to go unnoticed unless IT admin had something to prove. Only when they get caught do police get involved. Sony has released an internet-linked wristwatch powered by Google-backed Android software. Smartwatch gets online by connecting wirelessly to a wearer's Android smartphone using Bluetooth technology, according to Sony. The high-tech timepiece, reminiscent of one worn by classic comic strip detective Dick Tracy, was priced at US$150, available online and at Sony stores. Smartwatch provides access to live content and entertainment on the go, said Sony Mobile Communications Customer Unit President Paul Hamnett, who billed it as the first in a series of gadgets to expand the smartphone's reach. Smartwatch can switch from displaying time to acting as a touchscreen interface and for smartphone information. But they might have a even bigger competition coming from a Kickstarter-funded Pebble Watch, which I'm very tempted to get myself. Call it the power of the crowd, and it doesn't hurt if the crowd is really into your watches. Eric Minkowski planned to raise $100,000 US in about 40 days for his smartphone-compatible watches, but just 2 days into a Kickstarter crowdfunding raise, backers already pledged more than $1.8 million to pre-order the gadgets. The former University of Waterloo student and Palo Alto, California transplant launched his project on the US grassroots funding website on Wednesday, looking to raise money to make Pebble smartwatches. The gadget connects with iPhone and Android smartphones using Bluetooth 2.1 and alerts wearers to incoming messages and calls through silent vibration. It also set to host a variety of apps for activities like biking, running and golfing, as well as a music control app. The project started with an initial offer for the first 200 people to pledge their support of US$99 in exchange for one of the watches in black. After that sold out, the pledge increased to 115. Users can pledge greater amounts for different colours, multiple watches, or prototype developer-friendly watches. Within 2 hours of the launch, backers had pledged the minimum $100,000 his team had been looking to raise by May 18. They raised $1 million within 28 hours, and by 11 a.m. ET Friday, about 13,500 backers had pledged $1.8 million. Kickstarter charges a 5% fee, and Amazon.com, which handles the credit card payments, collects a fee of between 3% to 5%, but the developers retain full ownership of their project, be it film, comic book, a video game, or a watch. And I tell you what, I would love to get one of these watches.
Look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Look great.
That's the time?
Yes. They've got different watch faces. They've got such analog ones, digital ones, and even ones with the words on there, like, the time is 12:46, written in words. It has a picture of the sun for weather, temperature. You can get a binary watch face. And if you pledge certain amounts, you can actually get a custom watch face made for your company, completely designed by them as well. So
wow.
I've been so wanting a watch like this for like forever. I nearly got a Fossil Palm OS watch years ago, but the price was always a bit more than I was willing to pay at that stage. I'd even written a game to be played on it, but nobody wanted to play games on it because they were worried about the battery going flat before they could play the game. So, but yeah, definitely one to look out for.
Cool. What's your view on that news story, Steve?
I know you mentioned one about the I guess people looking into their the companies looking into their employees' email I don't know if, well, of course the employees don't like it, but I'm guessing that, you know, it isn't, as long as it's the employer's email system, you know, now if it's a separate account outside of the company, then probably that's not good, but.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you want to send personal stuff, use your Hotmail or Gmail. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What about you, JD? What's your view on that?
I want the watch.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
The what Sony are you? One or the Pebble one?
I'll take both, thank you. Who says I have to choose?
Cool,
is Jason offering?
Oh. I'm not sure, I don't know.
I'll the Pebble one.
Okay, so JD, tell us about the guest we have on today. The guest.
Oh, you said me?
The guest. No, JD. I'm asking JD about the guest. Who are we having on today? The guest.
Are you asking? I'm sorry. You're saying Jason or Jody?
Jody.
Jody.
Oh, we have a tremendous guest today. David Amberlin. And I have to say that David has been a thought leader in not just social media, but also search engine optimization and really the power of the internet. And, you know, I don't know what else to say, but I'm really excited to hear more about his thoughts on what's been happening with Instagram, and author of several books.
Jody, I'm excited to be here, and thank you for the introduction.
Thanks, Jody. Well, thanks, man. Welcome to the show, guys.
It's I've listened to you guys, and it's really exciting. And I think I'm in the UK at the moment, and it's just edging towards 5 o'clock. Wow. In the morning, and I know it's typical, really, of the kind of world we live in right now, where everything seems to have eroded in terms of time zones and borders, and we're getting into a very sort of flat structure in terms of connectivity, which is exciting, and it creates a lot of questions and a lot of challenges, not least the one on privacy, like Steve mentioned before, with people snooping on emails. I mean, it's just an example, because it belongs to a mindset. And this sort of leads a little bit into Instagram, really, because it's a big question right now, and it's on everybody's lips. Facebook laid down a cool $1 billion for this. So the question is, are they going to get their money's worth, and what is their game plan behind it? Open questions and really doing the analysis on a business-like basis. There's no real valid answer. Instagram, in terms of membership, has got about 33 million users, so they paid about $30 a user. And they didn't really get a lot of membership because those members already were using Facebook to upload their photographs. There is a privacy question, of course, because Facebook is notoriously good or bad, depending on how you look at it, at collecting user data, collecting photographs. There's a face recognition software development which is on the pipeline. It's been there for some time, and they're sort of toying with it, deciding which way to go. So there's a huge potential there. And of course, there's a question of when you lay that amount of money on the table, you're either trying to acquire something which you haven't got, or you're trying to keep something which others may want. Now, Facebook, of course, is full of engineers, and Instagram is not a great application in terms of programming. So they could easily create something as good or better and push it through their network. So really, they haven't paid a lot of money for something which they can't create, which leaves the other option, they are laying down a lot of money for something which they want to keep away from somebody else. And in this particular case, the most likely candidate is Google. It's no secret that Instagram was open to Google Android users recently, mm-hmm. and the Android environment is growing. And it's a big thing. When it comes to mobile, Google controls about 98% of the market because they had the foresight to get into this at quite an early stage. And Facebook, which is facing an IPO, which will probably go to about $100 billion, hasn't really got a mobile strategy in place. So if you're an investor, you'll be asking the first question, what are you going to do about mobile? And the second thing is, have you got any competitors there? Well, the Instagram buy answers both of these questions. They take away something which Google perhaps could use, And they're also creating, on paper at least, a mobile strategy, because now they can say, well, we have Instagram. It is very well sort of accepted in the mobile space. It already has a user base. So, you know, we've got a foot there and we can grow on that. So that's the whole story behind this. Now, obviously, Facebook says, you know, we got it because we like their engineers. We like this. And it's a good step, big step forward towards our photo sharing. Not true. Because if that's the case, you don't spend $1 billion. It's a huge amount of money. And the amount of money was a kind of money which you don't say no to, which usually reeks of a certain degree of desperation. If you have your back up against the wall, then you lay down the money, and it's a large enough sum for people to say yes. And this is exactly what's happened here.
Now, so, I see that Instagram also will put your photos on Flickr and Twitter and also Foursquare. Do you think that this acquisition is going to drop those out of its capabilities and have you check into Facebook instead of Foursquare and all photos only go to Facebook?
Well, Facebook very recently did a deal with Twitter, and Twitter's been making deals with everybody except Google. And this has been an ongoing sort of case since last June, when the when Twitter refused to renew the agreement they had with Google to indexing their stream, and because they basically fell out on over the agreed sum of money which they needed to pay, and Google went ahead and then launched Google Plus. And Twitter went ahead and made deals with everybody, including Bing, Facebook, and Yandex, which is the Russian search engine, which is the equivalent to Google in Russia, and sort of has kept Google outside. So the answer to this is that I don't think Instagram is going to drop out of Twitter. It may give Facebook leverage to make better deals with the other social networks. But to be fair, I think this is a very nuanced approach for Facebook, and everything we've seen so far on Facebook has been anything but nuanced. So, you know, if they actually do manage to have this kind of leverage, it's going to be incidental.
So is this going to stay a separate app, or is it going to be integrated into the Facebook app, do you think?
Well, the clever thing to do is to integrate into Facebook and use it as a launchpad for a better photo sharing within Facebook, because it's not that great. And also, they can, you know, do with the extra membership they'll get, you know, whatever percentage they haven't got from the existing membership of Instagram, they could actually do with it. Because funnily enough, although Facebook is growing, and it's growing at quite a steady rate, in its home markets, or perhaps in its, what we should say, in its cash-rich markets, which is the USA, the UK, and Australia, it's either plateaued or it's experiencing a small drop in membership numbers, which, again, from an investor point of view, that would be worrying, because this is where most of the advertising money is coming from. So hopefully, I mean, you know, if there was a plan in behind all this, they would say, yes, you know, we're using this to get ahead. The question of whether there is an actual plan it lies on the amount of money which they paid. So they paid $1 billion, which is a huge sum of money for what is essentially a phone app. So, you know, you draw your own conclusions from that.
I don't know. Facebook is really, it's coming on to almost a billion users, well, fairly close. And I'm kind of wondering, the acquisition of Instagram, you know, just to up their user base, obviously it's probably more likely for a different reason, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. I mean, at this level, basically, when you carry out the analysis, you look on a business basis, and companies which acquire tech at this level, they look at the make or buy question, which is, can we make it in house, and how much would it cost? Can we buy it, and how much would it cost? And both of these have a sort of a cost gain kind of weighting. And then there's the other one, where you actually buy something to take it away from somebody else, which is a strategic move, so that you actually blocking a competitor or a potential competitor from coming to your market. Now, Instagram is not complicated programming, so it could actually be remade or copied quite easily. So if Facebook really did want better photo sharing, all they had to do is copy Instagram programming, which is not even protected by patents at all, and it'd be okay. But the user base is something else. And like I mentioned before, most of those users are already in Facebook, so they didn't really gain many extra users. But at 33 million users who are fanatical photo sharing users, this is the kind of thing which Google Plus would benefit from, and Google would benefit from by actually gaining the number of users in there. And I must say that Google Plus right now, if we analyze how it's developing, it's right at the cusp, because it has a good user base, it's full of early adopters and techies, and they're very engaged, but it hasn't yet got what we would call the average fanatical user, the kind of person who takes a lot of photographs, shares them with their friends, shares them with their family, and brings in more people in there to actually talk about trivia, essentially. And no deep engagement, but the kind of social spreading which sort of drives your membership base. And in that respect, Google Plus is still suffering. So from their perspective, getting their hands on 33 million users would be a great thing. It's the kind of thing that sort of kickstarts the acceleration of their membership growth. And Facebook is over.
Do you think Facebook is using this as a way to get a foothold in the mobile market? Because you mentioned, you know, like Google obviously is really into mobile, and
that is certainly a potential benefit for them, because in the mobile market, Google controls 98% of that thanks to its Android ecosystem, and they're very well established. And Facebook going towards an IPO, which is going to net it a reported $100 billion, has no discernible mobile strategy. And if I were an investor about to lay down a lot of money into Facebook, this is one of those questions I would ask. So again, with this kind of move, they sort of cover that question. But the big question mark here is that $1 billion check they signed. Because, you know, if they had paid a few hundred thousand, if they had paid $500,000, if there was a deal involved, if there was a share exchange or something like that, you understand it, because that's how businesses actually work. They sort of try to move in a way which is very cost effective every step of the way. And here there's a huge sack of money laid on the table, no questions asked, and they walk away with an app. So the sum of money they paid reeks of two things. Either they're very inexperienced at dealing at that level, or they're panicking about something, or both. And this is exactly what sort of has analysts worried.
Mm. And with good reason. What do you think of the acquisition by Google of Whitespace?
I think Whitespace. Well, I listened to all the comments, and I was surprised as well by the design as well, or rather redesign. And then I watched the video which Vic Gudondra and Bradley Horowitz put out. And essentially what they said, which was quite revealing in its own right, is that they planned they were taken by surprise by the uptake and the extent to which Google Plus developed through the usage of its users, and they planned for the future. So what they put in place essentially is a platform where you're going to get constant integration of new services, new products coming in. Right now, it looks a bit odd, I must admit, and obviously there's a lot of noise about it. But you know, it's quite a lot of fun as well, because the G Plus community has taken the ownership of Whitespace, the Whitespace hashtag, and they sort of made a bit of a joke about it.
Yes.
But this is the plan behind it, essentially, though. That you know, they're going to constantly bring in new stuff which will improve the experience and the enrichment that Google Plus users get.
Now, since you're talking about Google Plus, what do you think about them changing their new layout to be a lot like Facebook?
Well, I'm very glad you mentioned this, because again, there's a rationale behind that. You've got to understand that Google is probably the world's first rigorous data-driven company. It does nothing for which it doesn't have some sort of data to back up its decisions, which doesn't mean it gets it right every time, but at least there's a very hard logic behind it. And the reason they brought that in is what I would call is the fun factor. Again, if you're trying to attract the kind of users which will sort of fire up your membership, and we're talking about here basically people like, you know, your friends, your grandma, your dad, and his friends who are sort of bringing in people and they're interacting in Google Plus, having a slightly more familiar interface like to what they're used to in Facebook is a plus. And here perhaps is a clear sign that Google Plus is getting now to the stage where it's ready to start attacking Facebook's membership and drawing those people in.
Cool, cool. So, Dave, let's talk about what you do with your books and stuff and that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, I do many things, but these days I sort of tend to be behind a computer screen doing quite a lot of heavy analysis of trends. Cool. and writing about that in a very non-technical, practical way. I write books on SEO.
Nice.
I've got a couple of books on Amazon, which are bestsellers. I'm just finishing book number 5, as a matter of fact. It's a pretty practical book on that. And at the beginning of this year, I brought out The Social Media Mind, which is both, I would say, a sort of thought-leading book, but also it has a lot of practical stuff in it for businesses. And if you're sort of struggling to come to grips with social media, exactly how to apply it, what it means for you, how you can gain from it, even at a personal level, but also at a company level or entrepreneur level, it's a good starting point because it gives you a very grounded sort of picture which will help you get a grip on it. And social media is hugely challenging. Mm. I mean, it presents companies with so many pitfalls that, you know, last year we sort of lost count of the social media disasters we had.
Right, right. So how much are the books? Can people buy these books? Or?
Yes, they're on Amazon. They're on most bookshops. They can be ordered through practically every bookshop in the world.
All right.
And you can get them both Amazon.com, Amazon.co.uk, Amazon.ca.
Cool.
And
all
most
right,
of the European ones.
Cool. So if we just direct a link to your profile, all information will be on there.
Yeah, it will be, yeah. It's
good
on
stuff.
My website. I've got a website, which is helpmyseo.com.
Okay,
I spend quite a lot of time actually putting in a lot of practical stuff there.
Nice.
And the books are mentioned there as well.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, if you're looking for practical help, the website will help.
Cool. And I'm sure JD would enjoy them books too, because I know she's into that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And I'm particularly intrigued by the whole Google change to the over SEOing your website. What's your take on that?
I think it's timely. And, you know, and again, it's one of those things which was misreported a little bit. You know, I saw a headline saying Google is against SEO. Google doesn't want you to SEO your site. And this is not what's happening at all. And to explain this a little bit, I'll just backtrack a little bit to the history of SEO, because SEO is basically a number of steps which are very, very technical, but they're very practical. And they have a mathematical logic, which then reverberates or resonates, I should say, with the mathematics which powers Google search. And it can potentially take a website which is probably not great from a human point of view, but from a search engine point of view, it can sort of press all the buttons. And it can push that website high up on the search rankings without it really being deserving. But doesn't, you know, search engines, there was nothing they could do about it. It responded to everything they were looking for. Now, what Google has done, and again, Google Plus here plays a huge role, because Google has taken essentially the membership base it has on Google Plus, and it's taken the social signal from that membership base, and it's using it as a ranking signal for sites. What this means in plain English, it means essentially that we as people are really good at deciding whether our website is really good in terms of value in related to a search query or not. Google are excellent at reading our behavior with this, and they're using that to basically decide for themselves whether a site should be ranked as high as it is or not. And what they're looking at right now are sites which are fantastically well optimized, but which are not getting a very good response from the human visitors. And that's a dead giveaway that the site is perfect in terms of SEO, but pretty poor in terms of value. And what Google wants is valuable sites, because they guarantee the end-user experience. And when you have a good end-user experience, then you use Google services and you use Google search, and it sort of goes on and on. And that's what the whole thing is behind it. So from an SEO point of view, I think this is great, because it gets rid of spam, and we all hate spam on search when you hit a website and, you know, it's rubbish basically. And it stops all this nonsense with optimizing websites which are not really worth anything.
Cool. All right. Well, so David, what's your view on the new Google Plus page? I don't like it personally, but what's your view on it? You like it?
I think it takes a little bit of getting used
to.
Yeah,
I think
so.
Yeah, I think I may be right there.
We all hate change. You know, we all get familiar with something, and the moment that happens, and if we like it, we become stakeholders in it, and we say, oh, you know, this is great, you know, because we feel really comfortable here. It's like our digital living room. And then somebody comes in when we're away at work and sort of rearranges
it. Yep.
Back home, you think, oh, who moved my lamp?
Yep. Definitely. So definitely. Not really. What about you, Steve? What's your view on the new page, mate?
Talking about me?
Yeah. Talking to you, Steve. Yeah. You.
Yeah. Skype messed up. You know, at first, the same thing happened to me. There was a, you know, everything changed off to the side, and it was really weird. But I knew it takes a while to get used to it, and I like it quite a bit so far. But I, like I said before, I don't use nearly as many features as a lot of people do, so there might be an issue with, you know, other people other than myself.
Right. What about you, Jason? What's your view on the new thing?
You know what I find interesting? This sort of relates to the change with the changes to Facebook.
Yeah.
Everybody, quite a few people are saying at the moment on Facebook, well, I wish they wouldn't go with this cover thing. I wish they'd go back to where it was. Forgetting that a year ago they were saying the same thing when Facebook changed, and a year before that Facebook changed as well, and they were saying bring back the old one. And there were groups and fan pages, bring back the old Facebook. We want the old Facebook. And now they're changing it with a cover photo on there. They're saying, no, go back to the one we just had. It's like, well, you didn't like that one, but how come you're complaining about this one?
Yeah, same thing with YouTube. Yeah, same thing with YouTube as well. Yeah, definitely.
People get used to it, and then they'll come up with an idea in the future to change it again. They'll be saying, no, we love this one. Don't change it to that one. But
yep. Yeah. definitely. All right, Jade, you got some news stories you want to speak about? You trade some news stories?
Yeah, well, one of them had to do with the new Google look, but then the Hangout on Air goes to YouTube.
Yes, that's correct. I have that now. I can do that now. That's pretty cool.
And I'll tell you, I was watching it on YouTube the other day. I think you were, what were you talking about, the new Google wall? And it was interesting because I was in YouTube watching you.
Cool.
which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
And have you guys heard about the Facebook? You can download all of your information, but the interesting thing is not only can you get the information you got before, you now can find the IP addresses and mobile numbers that previously Facebook wasn't sharing. So in terms of being able to stalk yourself or if somebody perhaps had logged in using your Facebook account, you can find out what that IP address is now.
Cool.
And you couldn't do that before.
Good stuff.
Yeah, and we already, I think, beat to death the Facebook buying Instagram. Yeah,
that's boring. So. I'm over that.
Of talk lately about the Facebook app on iPhone and iPad. Have you seen that, Brad?
No, I haven't. No, what's up with that, man?
Well, because the way that if you have something like Draw Something or another app that authenticates your login via the Facebook app, what happens is the app launches the Facebook app, and then the Facebook app will send back a token, which is essentially a number, so that any time in the future, instead of sending your username password to the Facebook app or opening it up and requiring you to log in and then bounce back to the other app, it just uses that token for a certain amount of time. But it stores that token in plain text within the app, which apparently other apps are able to get a hold of that or even authenticate with the Facebook app themselves without your permission, and people might be able to steal your information. Now, the stories I heard about this on other podcasts had come in the last few days, but before that, a friend of mine had actually said that she logged onto her iPad Facebook app and looked in the messages sent folder, and there was a message not sent by her or anyone in her family, had been sent to somebody that she doesn't know, saying, wow. Yeah, I'll be there later this afternoon, just give me a call and let me know.
Wow.
And she logged on to Facebook on the computer, it's not there, logged on her Android device, the message is not there in the sent items, but on the Facebook app it is. So it starts me thinking, rather than this being something that people just get scared about and rumors of problems, that this could actually be a real issue. Now, it's not anything malicious done with her account. She changed her password, but because it's using a token to authenticate, it doesn't matter what you change your password to, the token is still going to be valid. So,
wow.
Something to think about. Anyway.
Yeah, it is. All right, any last words before we go, Jody? You want to ask David any more questions before we go?
I'm honored to be talking with you, and I'm looking forward to connecting on the other medias, Facebook and Google Plus, and picking up a copy of your book. So,
absolutely, thank you very much. And it's been a real pleasure. It's incredibly good interview. Although it's really early in the morning now, and I'm sort of struggling a little bit to make sense.
Yeah, you should be in bed, mate. You should be in bed. You should be in bed. It's past your bedtime.
I'm sort of thinking about going in the bed in a bit.
Yeah, yeah, I will let you go anyway, so you can get to bed. Steve, any last word before we go? Where can they find you on Twitter, Steve, before we go?
That would be chatterbox_live.
Cool.
And, of course, Justin TV.
And this video will be on TV, I hope, and also on YouTube from Steve. Yep. Thanks, Steve, for doing that.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Dave. Jason, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me Warlock, WAULOK, and BlueBilby.com.
You can find me at Brad Oz on a Tech Webcast. Jody?
You can find me on Twitter as Sunswept, and you can find me, obviously, the other places as Jody Rains or WebMarcom.
Cool. And what about you, Dave? Where can they find you on the interwebs, mate?
Or you can find me on Twitter as David Ammerland, and you can find me on Facebook, the same name again, and the same on Google Plus. So
good,
you've
stuff.
Only got one easy to remember identity.
Good stuff. What are you selling the books for at the moment? For when, how much the books gone for? To sell how much?
The Social Media Mind, I think it's going for about $10 to $11, okay, if I remember correctly.
Cool.
SEO Help is a little bit more than that. I think it was released at near the $30 mark, but Amazon has got it at a good discount, so I think it's about $15 or $16 at the moment.
Cool.
And obviously they're also available in the Kindle store, which is a lot cheaper.
Okay.
And they are also available as downloads from the ebook versions are downloadable from my website as well.
Okay.
They're even cheaper than that.
Cool.
So
what
it's
about,
always well, you know, worth taking a look.
What about on the app store on the Apple bookstore?
I think we've got not 100% sure because I got a note from the publishers not too long ago. They were getting them into the Apple store, but I haven't heard if they've actually managed to get them in, or there's a queue of books waiting to go in, so I can't really be 100% sure.
Cool. All right. Well, that's about it. Thanks, Dave, for being on, mate. Appreciate your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure, guys.
Thanks, mate. And Jody, guess what? You lost the game.
Nope.
I always wanted to say that to you. You lost the game. I always wanted to say that.
Okay.
Just know what the game is. I'll tell you later.
Thanks, Jason, for coming back, mate. You're a legend.
No worries. Catch you next week.
Thanks, mate. See ya.
Hi, Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. Weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running Tech News Podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind expanded. Tune in next week for more Tech Talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guest they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!